Welcome to G&D Spotlight, the podcast where we shine a light on the ever-evolving world of security tech. I'm Jessica Antonacci, marketing for US Paytech, and today we are continuing the special series of live podcast episodes recorded at G&D headquarters in Munich, Germany, during the Blockchain Thinkers event. We are joined by our moderator, G&D's Robert Heinze, Director of Technology and Innovation Management, and our panelists, Professor Dr. Co-Pierre Georg, President at Frankfurt School Blockchain Center, Hussein Kapasi, Blockchain Lead at PwC, Irfan Khan, Founder and CEO of Hypermine. Today's topic is titled Decentralized Identity, a Privacy Dream or a Regulatory Nightmare. I'll now hand it over to Robert.
So thanks a lot for having us here on the stage. I just want to take a few minutes to introduce you to my fellow panelists here. And I'm very grateful that you take the time to look at our decentralized identity discussion. So we have with us Hussein, who is actually heading at PwC, the blockchain practice, with over 6 years of experience implementing and really bringing the industry forward. I guess a huge deep dive on wide projects experience we have here in our group. Then also we have Co-Pierre, who is heading the Blockchain Center of the Frankfurt School of Business with a vast majority of research and development work in his previous stages, which range from Cape Town to Columbia and Oxford University. And now he's here and at G&D. And also we have Irfan here. I guess he is the tech pioneer. He is really working in the decentralized identity topic. He's also the founder of a company which is called Hypermine, and one of which recently won one of the biggest RFPs in India to work on.
Probably in the world, yeah.
Yeah, which in order to create verifiable credentials for a specific use case that we will dive in a few minutes. So first of all, thanks for being here and a warm welcome to that audience. The introduction was decentralized identities, a nightmare or something that really helps us in society. I think decentralized identities as such is a huge topic. It's rich in complexity. There are so many points of views. We will see that also in our discussion. We will run through a few of them. And it's also very interesting what's going on in the world, because nearly every big industrialized legal jurisdiction is looking into that topic from the one or the other side. And today, we also need to tackle that topic identity from that aspect. What is really decentralized? Because we all treat our identities also in a very decentralized way, like the products that G&D is currently offering, like passports and national ID documents. They are accepted everywhere, but actually they are yet issued highly centralized, right? And I think talking about these differences and these areas of the use case should guide us through the next 20 minutes. So I will start with a short rapid fire so that you can get to know everyone here. Like a very brief statement from everyone. So Hussein, maybe start with you. What is decentralized identity for you? What does it mean?
For me, it means mostly two words: privacy. This is what it enables the companies to drive it. And the second one is the trust, right? The trust is really the key. Let me give you an example. I worked for a gambling company and I went really to the gambling shop and said, okay, what about the identity? And they said, yeah, we keep it here. We don't share with anyone, you know? and they thought that's already quite decentralized, right? So that's a kind of a level if we take industry to industry, right? So for me, those are really the key things, privacy and trust.
Co-Pierre, would you go with the same?
Yeah, but with a slightly different take. So the notion of privacy that we have today goes back to Warren and Brandeis in 1890 in the US, and the idea of privacy as the right to be let alone. But that's a binary choice. I can choose to be left alone, not to be photographed, not to be reported on unfairly. But it's a binary choice. And I think with today's infrastructure and today's world, that binary choice is no longer the right choice. And I would argue that decentralization is primarily interesting because it gives us the ability to control our information beyond just the right to be let alone. And that's what I find most interesting at the moment.
Okay, Irfan, what keeps you passionate about decentralized identity?
Is this mic working? Can you hear me?
So I think Copierre kind of stressed on that word. It's control, right? It goes both ways. So the reason identity is issued is so that they can control. Let's face it, right? It is all about control. But at the same time, of course, it helps make life easier to deliver products and services and so on and so forth. But what's more important to take into consideration is that today we live in a world where our identity, as you rightly said, is issued by someone, it's managed by someone, it's stored somewhere else, it's monetized by somebody else. And, you know, we as the actual owner of that identity are completely left out of the equation. We have no say in it, right? So that's where my interest really lies. And basically, how do we bring back control, saying that, okay, this is my identity and I would like at least some say in it, you know what I mean? So that's what I—that's what really keeps me going.
The hyper mind, right?
Mine.
Okay. So let's look a little bit in order to understand decentralized identities a bit better. Let's get a feeling for use cases. What is out there in the market? What do you really expect today and tomorrow? What kind of use cases do you see in your daily life? You consult a lot of industry players, and so use cases, I guess you have a very good idea of
yes,
what is
definitely.
Out there.
So, I mean, at the moment, what we are focusing, so especially I'm working since last 8 months really on the real world asset tokenization. And I think this is where, you know, how do we use really the digital identity from three different set of, you know, perspective, one from investor side, you know, the customers who are really you going to use the tokens, right? How do we actually ensure? And then also from, you know, the banking aspects of it, right? Like, so these are really the enable asset class. So how do we actually give an identity to the physical objects, right? So these are really the aspect that we are working on today. And I have already, you will find a lot of thought leader and white papers that I've written, you know, with some of the OEMs in Germany. What really excites me is really how do we use this identity when it comes to machine-to-machine and human-to-machine communication, right? When it comes to the transactions that is happening, I can give you an example like automated wallet parking, right? So the parking that you can automatically park your car in a fully automated garages, right? EV charging, I mean, companies are really working that it is super seamless. You just go there and everything works out automatically. In order to have that, we really need to have decentralized identities, that it all works together. And I think this is what, you know, the future for me looks like in the next 5 to 10 years, like how it will shape up.
Sounds like a very foundational aspect, creating an identity that is usable in this multiple context.
Definitely.
What are your current experiences in that field? Because you are implementing these kind of identities already today.
Yeah, I mean, it's a struggle. It's a struggle because you're trying to basically bring in a fundamental paradigm shift where you have UX problems, you have a learning curve, you have large corporations going against you, governments are not supportive. So it's really an uphill battle. But in the last year and a half, and I think Hussein kind of summed it up, is that you this is where you want to be, right? You want to be here where in this utopian world where we're in control of our ID and data and so on and so forth. But then to get there, you have to cross certain rites of passage, right? And I think right now we're seeing that although, yes, there are very few projects in the world that are like really SSI and so on, self-sovereign identity, but the real change is coming in tokenization, right? So only if you tokenize that data can you do something with it, right? If you don't tokenize it, how are you going to do anything with it, right? So we're working in a few verticals right now. I mean, one of the largest projects that is probably in the world is the DigiYatra project in India, where they've truly deployed self-sovereign identity on a large scale. They've issued more than 100 million verifiable credentials in the last 18 months. So that's basically limited to the airport, where you just enter the airport with your biometrics and you are able to get onto the flight without any documentation. So that seems like a hot use case, and you have a lot of airports who are deploying this technology, but a lot of them may not be privacy preserving or self-sovereign in that sense, right? Dubai Airport, Heathrow Airport, and all the other airports, but they may not be self-sovereign in nature, but India is. Another big push around tokenization I'm seeing is around the education system, where students get this piece of paper at the end of their course, and they can't really do much with it because one student has to apply to 10 schools or 10 jobs. And if they take copies of their document, it becomes tampered and so on, right? So there's a digital push for students to have access to credentials that are verifiable. And obviously, they have a lot of access control and a couple of other industries. Payment is also one we are looking into right now. But of course, each consumes it in a different manner. We can jump into specifics if needed.
Yeah, I think there are two aspects in that which are perfectly giving you a possibility to also jump into that discussion. Talking about students receiving their certificates, right? Frankfurt School of Business, I guess, has a lot of students. And also what I really liked on that topic is typically it can be solved. It can solve two issues. Decentralized identities can work for privacy, but also for transparency. And you have also that research background in digital public infrastructure. So maybe also you can give us a short notion on how do you feel?
So we had that use case of students wanting to own their marks as credentials. And the challenge with that is that the data is created by the universities and the universities think they own that data, not the student. And that's important, for example, in the medical field, where a doctor's approbation might have to be revoked when there's malpractice. So there's genuine cases where the university needs to have full control over that. There's some use cases where SSI can help by, you know, giving somebody the ability to revoke this. But it for me, SSI begs a bigger problem that you're touched on, and that's the problem of privacy. Privacy is like virtue. You can only lose it once. And SSI helps you to lose your privacy because you verify information that somebody can copy, can create local versions of it, and even if you don't have the full provenance all the way back to your wallet. For many purposes, you don't need that provenance. If you just want to create a large database to do inference, to infer about the observable characteristics of somebody that comes and applies for a loan. Yeah. These are really fundamental issues, and they always go back to the question of who owns the data, and is it even possible to say that I own my data, because it's always relational. And the university example is such a nice example, because initially I thought, oh, the students, you know, they should own their data. And when we spoke with the registrars of universities, they came and said, no, you got it all wrong. This is our data. We own it. We bestow upon you a degree. You can have a copy of that, what we own, and we give you the right to use that copy, but not more.
Yeah. It's an interesting discussion that started here, because decentralization and the distributed aspect of the identity has so many different viewpoints, right? Yeah. Decentralization can maybe create value on the issuer and also on the verifier side. And this is a very interesting aspect, because when we talk to government clients at GND, it's a similar viewpoint. The national ID is issued by a government to you. It's centralized, but you want to have it very interoperable. I really like that aspect of the discussion very much. Is that true for industry objects as well, Hussein?
Yes, so definitely. I think that's what I wanted to add, I think, to close the circle what Pia and also Irfan mentioned, right? So how we look into it is to map out, like, what is really the impact of the change, right? So if you consider like a university certificates or an identity, you have it today with you. And I think, as you just mentioned, that, you know, you will have like a digital version which can be trusted. So the change is not that big. But then if you move really to an example where we say, okay, how many of you are here using the EV car, right? And I mean, if you travel from here to France, you need to probably download now multiple apps. So can you actually just have one identity and can use over the multiple apps so that it's very seamless? So I think this is really a huge change, you know, where you don't need to share the identity multiple times, but you're actually able to move from app to app just using one SSI. This is, I think, is an example of a medium change. And then as gave an example of like automated wallet parking, right? Or, you know, tracking the feedback from a cancer patient. I think at the moment, if you look into the cancer research, most of the time, you know, the data is not there because patients are not willing to share that data. And as you just mentioned, right, it stays within the hospitals. So I have actually worked with, you know, the pharma OEMs where they say, okay, how can we really deal with this to really get like first-hand information, and SSI can really change the game, because then they are anonymously able to provide the feedback directly to the OEMs, removing all the intermediaries. And I think this also fastens a lot of things, you know, in terms of research. So I think this is really how we see the change, you know, exactly.
Perfect. So it also allows for co-opetition in, and also for better research perspectives. So I also got the notion that trust is a huge element in all of that. How do you see the role of a trust anchor in that digital identity ecosystem based on decentralized technology? Because this is what we are actually talking about. Who would you see in charge for trust? Maybe looking at different verticals, Web3 topics, real-world topics, industry topics. How would you start to frame that? Maybe we start with Irvin and go.
Yeah, sure. This is interesting. So the way I look at it, there is two aspects to it, right? At the end of the day, when we're talking about self-sovereign identity, we typically build infrastructure around identity, right? So we allow you or we enable users to be able to do something with that identity, right? It's not identity in itself that we're building. So when we are talking about anchor identity, so you would probably have something like a national identity or a bank identity that you would anchor yourself against that. Okay, I want to prove that I am who I'm saying I am. And how do I do that? I can either do it based on some transactions. Say, okay, I have a history of my uses. This is the money I've transferred. These are things I've done. This is the places that I've gone. And you can probably build like a reputation score on that, right? And then build out your trust from there. The other is fairly simple. You just have a national ID or a European ID where you are just verifying yourself against that ID and then this credential is stored on. So there are a couple of ways of doing this, right? The panel before this as well, I mean, I was just thinking about it in my head, right? That blockchain in itself does not really have an identity layer, which is where the fundamental root problem comes from because of all these social engineering problems. If you were able to make a transaction with someone just with if they had a green check mark based on whatever verification method, right? That would probably reduce drastically. Mm-hmm. You know, if there was a very simple way to verify that the person you are transacting with is the legitimate business, it's a legitimate person, you would be able to solve that problem, right? But of course, the human side is always the question. But again, so the anchor in itself right now is the blockchain use case in identity. Identity in itself is one word. The blockchain is a different world altogether, right? So to be able to verify an industry or a business or an object or a person without the need for a third party intervening at probably a free cost, that is where the blockchain really adds value outside of the payment infrastructure. And that's how I look at it.
Yeah, maybe to add on that. So there's a challenge with blockchain and identity, and that has to do with the notion of privacy. Privacy is a human right, a recognized human right. It's in Europe enshrined in GDPR, particularly Article 17, the right to erasure is a fundamental challenge to blockchain. So far, there's no clear guidance from Commission or Parliament or anybody on how to deal with this. For most things that we put on a blockchain, be it machine-to-machine transactions, being payments, it's probably fine-ish with caveats because you could consider your payment history personally identifying information. And there are use cases that you can construct where you can, with reasonable certainty, reconstruct who you are based on your payment history. So it's already getting into a gray area. But if we now start moving more of our personal information, the things that we would like to keep in a wallet, that we'd like to keep as part of our identity, if we have more of those verifications that are stored on a blockchain, I think there's a fundamental conflict with GDPR that I don't know how to resolve it. I don't know if anybody knows how to resolve it. And I don't know if we ever will be able to resolve this. I think there's a deep-seated problem here that's definitely worthwhile addressing. And I think we need to be very careful, especially with technologies like SSI that make it very easy to capture a lot of personal information, to get all these credentials, that we don't create an infrastructure that makes it easy to give away those personal information, because that's the downside risk of the technology. And the balance, I'm not sure we quite have it right yet.
Yeah, and I think perfectly answered by both the colleagues here, but I think I would add, you know, on that is the word humanizing this trust. So far, we are really used to trust, you know, the brand, you know, the bank that we have been using or, you know, wherever we are submitting the identity. And now we are switching it from entity to a technology. And I think this is really a bigger change. And I think I can actually give a comparable example that before we were hesitant to use the mobile banking apps, and now it's become a part of it, right? It's in our day-to-day use. And I think it's just that we need to humanize it, how to use it, and I think start trusting it. And I think could be, as Pierre mentioned, right, that today the perfect technology, you know, with the perfect security, given that there are a number of hacks and everything possible around it, won't be there, but I'm pretty sure that it would be there. I think, for example, Samsung has already a wallet with identity in the mobile phones, right? So today, and I think this already shows that, okay, if you have a wallet with an identity in your mobile phone with a physical chip or kind of a physical, you know, chip in there, I think this is going to be the future. I think this is exactly what is being planned also for the cars, for all the devices, right? So it has individual identities, individual wallets. And I think
something that we really like to hear at G&D is not paid by us.
Yeah, but that's what all the companies are actually targeting for, right?
So yeah, but of course, it's a huge topic. Blockchain can maybe serve the verification part in the trust aspect, but the validation will be still up to some governance mechanisms that we have to build around that. So I just received a signal that the time is up.
Oh, no.
So it would be time to formulate first a last wish to that ecosystem. If we could have one wish to the decentralized identity ecosystem, what would it be? Quick fire, everyone, and then we close that one and go for the next panel.
I would suggest a glass bowl wish would be, you know, to really focusing from the business perspective of it and looking at the holistic view, because always the identity is always a piece of the bigger puzzle, you know, a piece of the bigger use case. And I think this is really, you know, helping companies to scale, to calculate the business benefit of it rather than really putting it, you know, at a really specific use case of a decentralized identity. And I think those who have really succeeded are really those companies who focus big end-to-end. And I think not only looking at one technology as a blockchain, but what is really the interplay of blockchain with other technologies and how it really plays a role in the whole ecosystem.
Anything to add?
Just a rapid fire. So I think we have accepted this privacy as binary choice paradigm, you know. And I don't think that's the best way forward. By accepting this paradigm, we have fallen for this, these are not the droids you're looking for kind of methodology. We should demand more. We should demand better control over our information, over our personal data. And control goes together with decentralization, but it goes beyond privacy. So if I had a wish, I would say we should abandon privacy as a concept because it's not serving us anymore as it used to in the 1890s. And we should instead talk about how infrastructure can help us control our information, because then we would have a much richer set of rights that that we could negotiate about, that we could reassign, that we could share, that we could govern. By accepting this binary choice, we are trapped in a world that doesn't really apply because technology has changed so much.
What I would like to close with is essentially, I think adoption is a problem. And one of the best ways to basically resolve that problem is to involve the user into the value chain, right? So to just a small example, right? So today you have every business that is pouring billions into Google and Facebook for ads, right? And it's just this black box that nobody really knows where that money is going, how many times it's popping up, and you just have to believe Facebook and Meta or whatever that, yeah, okay, these impressions did turn up. In a self-sovereign model, it would be so much easier because you would have to maintain your privacy. You can reach out to your demographic of user directly without having to pay these big corporations who are basically manipulating your data. And you could actually have a fraction of that money actually go to people like you and me who are actually giving away our identity, right? It's basically a push and pull. Business has to think about monetization as well as tokenization. Governments have to push privacy and regulation, and us users like you and me, we also have to go and fight and say, hey, you know, I would like some control and some money back for my data. Like, thank you.
Okay, thanks to the panel. And whoever wants to talk further about SSI, decentralized identities, there are a lot of specialists in the room, also from G&D, who are touching these topics. Also from the panelists, we will stay here and be available for networking and further discussions. Thank you so much.
Yes, we are running out of time, but I would like to ask for an exemption from all of our attendees. Maybe we can answer one question from the audience, if anyone have any questions.
Hello, thanks for the insightful discussion. I'm Gopi from TUM Blockchain Club. So exactly 3 years ago at TUM, we were working on a project which involved decentralized identifiers. And at that time, we were, you know, working with W3C, MIT, and all the other people. And one of the major pain points was interoperability that comes with it. And I think the standardization was also a big issue. So, I mean, if you can, you know, provide some insights, how is it currently evolving, or what is the current state? Are we getting towards the universal universal resolvers that we call, or is it still far away?
Thanks. So I think very good question. And it is really at the heart, you know, of the full-scale implementation. So that already shows that you have done some implementation work. I would say it depends really on industry to industry. Yeah. Let me give you an example that I had worked, you know, last 1.5 years on the battery passport topic, right? It involves the whole automotive industry, and it requires the unique identifier for each battery to be tracked. You know, and on a product level, we are not talking on a batch level, you know, just for a name of the whole product group level. We need to track it on each physical battery level. And I think for that, there has been a standard defined, you know, which is from a German government with the association called Battery Pass. This is the case. For the pharma industry, I have done also the same work. I think this, I cannot speak about it, but they have also defined via crypto anchor. So they have a kind of a chip, which is, they call it as a crypto anchor, and that behaves as a kind of a unique identifier, because pharma medicines are the biggest or the huge size of a counterfeit market, right, in the world, across the world. So they have actually put like a crypto anchor, they call it, which you can actually track it across the value chain, no matter where your medicine goes in the world. And I think based on that, to answer your question on interoperability, they define the whole ecosystem around it. So it's not a standard because nobody has done it so far, but they said, okay, we take, you know, the whole ecosystem, and they actually step by step onboarded, you know, the companies they needed, and they created this interoperability standard for this particular application. This is an application for the life science business. And I think this is really the first you will see probably in the next few months, probably it would be open in the German news, that this is really how they did full scale interoperable, you know, which interacts with the whole value chain. So packaging companies, you know, the chemical companies and the OEMs, everybody. And I think I have also not seen so far, probably the first company at a scale, you know, in the world that they have nailed it. Yeah.
Thank you very much. It's a great topic. Never-ending discussions. Everyone can have a say of it. We basically own our identity, and that's what we are. And all the panelists have their own opinions and angles looking into the same topic. So very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
Even though we don't have enough time.
Subscribe now so you never miss an episode. We can't wait to share these exciting conversations with you.